Network. This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A Pentagon audit has found Vice President Dick Cheney's former company may have overcharged the Army by $1.09 per gallon for nearly 57 million gallons of gasoline delivered to citizens in Iraq, senior defense officials say. Auditors found potential overcharges of up to $61 million for gasoline that a Halliburton subsidiary delivered as part of its no-bid contract to help rebuild Iraq's oil industry. Many Democrats have criticized the Halliburton contracts, suggesting that they were a political payoff for a company with strong ties to the GOP and whose executives gave generously to the Bush campaign. A Time magazine reporter suffered severe shrapnel wounds and lost his hand when he tried to throw away a grenade tossed into a Humvee he was riding in with a Time photographer and two U.S. soldiers, colleagues said Thursday. Time senior correspondent Michael Weisskopf and contributing photographer James Noctway were traveling with a U.S. Army patrol in Baghdad Wednesday night when the attack occurred, a statement from Time managing editor Jim Kelly said. The soldiers were also wounded, the U.S. military said, but gave no further information. Time would not offer details on the incident, but a memo sent to Weisskopf's former colleagues at the Washington Post said he picked up the grenade and tossed it out of the Humvee. It exploded, blowing off his hand and wounding him in the chest and arms. Iraqi rebels fired a salvo of mortar shells at coalition headquarters early Friday in an incident that highlighted their ability to strike at the seat of U.S. power in Iraq. There were no injuries in the attack, and only light damage was reported to a building in the so-called Green Zone, the downtown area housing the headquarters of the U.S.-led coalition, a military spokesman said. It was the first such attack since U.S. forces mounted a massive counteroffensive in Baghdad last month, dubbed Operation Iron Hammer, aimed at preventing strikes against the coalition's military and civilian targets. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Thieves stole the nose from a stuffed rhinoceros in a Norwegian museum, leading to fears that the horn was likely ground into a powder prized as an aphrodisiac in Asia. Thieves broke into the Bergen Museum on Norway's west coast and used an angle grinder to remove the horn from the rhino, which had been part of the museum's collection for more than a century. The December 2nd theft made national news Thursday after it was first reported by a local newspaper. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried, and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today, we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
Yes, she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show live on radio stations from literally from Pacific to Atlantic, coast to coast, border to border, also streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, stream 145. And broadcasting live around the world on various internet radio stations, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com. With archives at White Rose Society, you can find all of it at tomhartman.com, where you'll also find a link to our chat room, which is already full of folks having a fun and fascinating conversation. An independent labor analyst, David Bacon. I learned about this about 30 minutes before we went on the air, and it just moved to the top of the stack, my friends. David Bacon, an independent labor analyst, was recently in Iraq. And he said today, and I quote, U.S. occupation forces in Iraq escalated their efforts to paralyze Iraq's new labor unions with a series of arrests this weekend. On Saturday, a convoy of 10 Humvees and personnel carriers descended on the old headquarters building of the Transport and Communications Workers Union in Baghdad's central bus station, which has been since June used as the office of the Iraqi Workers Federation of Trade Unions. 20 soldiers jumped out, stormed into the building, put handcuffs on 8 members of the Federation's executive board, and took them into detention, end quote. We are busting unions in Iraq. I read this, I couldn't believe it, so we called David Bacon, and he's on the line with us right now. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey,
good
David.
To be with you and your listeners.
Thank you. And by the way, if any of our listeners have any comments or questions for David, our number is 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. David, tell me what happened.
Well, the occupation authorities arrested 8 of the leaders of the Iraqi Workers Federation of Trade Unions, which is one of the two new union federations that have gotten organized in Iraq since the fall of the Saddam Hussein regime, and took them into detention. Now, the folks were only held for a day, but I think what this was really kind of a warning shot across the bow of these unions, telling them basically to stop their organizing activity in Iraqi factories, because they are being seen, I think, by the occupation authority as an obstacle in the way of the privatization of the Iraqi economy.
Well, just as the Bush administration here at home sees labor unions as an obstacle to the privatization, isn't it? Well, the government employees workers union,
that's
the various
right.
unions are obstacles to the privatization of American government. But I mean, unions in general are viewed as obstacles to the I can't come up with a word for it. What would you call it? The concept of fascism of the synthesis of business and government together that Mussolini
right.
came up with is just running rampant, and I'm reluctant to call it fascism because most people don't even understand what that means. But what else can we call it? What's going on here?
Well, let's try the massive transfer of wealth from working people to the employers and the large corporations of this country. That's kind of what's
yeah.
going on here. And that's also
elite.
What's going on in Iraq, too, although because of the fact that Iraq is now under a military occupation, the Bush administration can do things in Iraq that I think they would be a little reluctant to do here. This would be like the Bush administration going into the offices of the AFL-CIO at 815 16th Street in Washington, D.C., right up the street from the White House, and going in and arresting John Sweeney and seven of the other leaders of the AFL-CIO. Now, that's not something that I hope we're likely to see in the near future here, but that's what they just did in Iraq. And the reason for it, again, is because the occupation authorities, Bush has a guy who was a fundraiser for him, a man named Tom Foley. And Tom Foley was put in charge of the private sector development agency of the occupation authority. And since taking up that position, he's
now, Let me pause you there, David, just so our listeners
right
can
ahead.
Track this. But what Bush did was he put a good buddy, as he, you know, cronyism of the first order is the Bush administration's first mantra, and he put a good buddy who had been a fundraiser for him in charge of basically selling off the Iraqi state-owned businesses to other good buddies of the Bush administration, under a set of rules that say that a corporation in America that buys some of the assets of Iraq can bring 100%. They can repatriate all. That is, they can bring all of the profits from that back to the United States. They don't have to reinvest it in Iraq. I mean, this is like what the British East India Company did in North America that led to the Boston Tea Party, and did in India that led to Gandhi's revolt. This is exact, and so he put his buddy in place there. Pardon my interruption. Continue your story.
No, you've got it exactly right, Tom. And just as those previous instances inspired revolts of the people who were subject to it, Iraqi workers have been organizing unions in large part because they're afraid that when those factories get privatized, they're going to lose their jobs, because when these big companies come in and buy them, they're going to lay off workers in order to cut their labor costs. And unemployment in Iraq now is up at 70%, and there's no unemployment benefit system. So if workers lose their jobs, they're in trouble.
Yeah, and not only that, David, in Iraq right now, the emerging group of new employers are the companies that are being hired as subcontractors by Halliburton and Bechtel and other American corporations, and they are importing people from Pakistan and from Southeast Asia to work because they don't want to hire local Iraqis because they say they can't be certain of their loyalty. The Iraqis are saying it's because they can get cheaper they can import cheaper labor than Iraqis in Iraq.
Yes, and it's really hard to get cheaper than that, because the average wage for a factory worker right now in Baghdad is $60 a month. And that's actually going down from what workers were receiving during Saddam Hussein's time, because during that time workers received additional benefits like subsidies for food and housing that were abolished when the occupation began. So the occupation is making Iraqi labor cheaper. And that's another gift to the corporations
yeah.
that are coming in and buying up or going to buy up these factories. But
so,
you know,
so what? I'm sorry, continue.
The capper of it all, Tom, is that there was a law that Saddam Hussein issued in 1987 that said that workers in these state-owned factories and enterprises like oil refineries and shoe factories and the port of Umkasar, the workers in these enterprises didn't have a right to form unions because they were employees of the government. And the Bush administration is continuing to enforce that law in Baghdad right now, so that when these unions organize and workers form their union committees inside these factories and they go to the manager of the factory and try and negotiate with him, the manager says, we can't talk to you because the occupation authority says that you're not permitted to have a union here.
This is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, when Hitler did this stuff in Germany, it was called the Nazification of Germany. And then when he started doing it in Austria and France, the Nazification, maybe we should call this the Bushification of Iraq. I mean, the Khanization. You know, they are reinventing Iraq in the finest ideal of the conservative agenda of a ruling elite and a whole bunch of worker bees who are terrified of their, you know, the whole cheap labor mantra. Keep them scared to death of losing their jobs and right on the edge of desperation, and you'll never have to worry about workers asking for pesky things like raises or benefits.
Yes, that is what they're building in Iraq, and I think it kind of shows that what the objective here in Iraq has been all along is really economic. You know, it wasn't weapons of mass destruction. They didn't find any of those, and I don't see how you can say that it was to bring democracy to the Iraqi people if you're still continuing to enforce these Saddam Hussein era laws that say that workers can't have unions. So what does that leave us with? I think that what it leaves is that the objective of this is essentially to allow U.S. corporations to come in and loot the Iraqi economy.
As they are our economy.
That's right.
It's the same thing
in both places.
Yeah, this is the conservative agenda here in the United States is being done quietly by subterfuge and executive orders and, you know, slipped into the Medicare bill and the energy bill and all these kinds of things. And, we'll just, you know, bump off 800,000 federal employees and privatize the, you know, and they're doing it nibble, 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 nibble. And people are starting to wake up to the fact that all those little nibbles are turning into a giant gulp. And we're seeing, you know, the middle class in America just being wiped out. But in Iraq, they didn't even bother to do the nibbling. They're just going in and they're saying, wham, that's it, guys. You know, no more. You now must bow down to the overlords, also known as CEOs.
That's right. And one of the problems, of course, for workers in this country is that we're paying for it. Because,
yeah,
you know, Congress just appropriated $87 billion.
On top of another $80 billion that we'd already spent. It's over $150, $160 billion now.
That's right. And this is being the rationale for these appropriations is that this is for the reconstruction of Iraq. But when you take a look at where the money is going, what you see, for instance, is that it's not being used to set up an unemployment benefit system so that the 70% of Iraqi workers who have no jobs can find some way of surviving. And it's not being used to raise the wages of people who are still working in these factories. What it's doing is it's going for these kind of no-bid contracts and to enable a process of privatization to take place for the benefit of corporations. So
yeah,
this is really what the purpose of the occupation is. Primarily, it's economic, and the U.S. taxpayers are paying the bill.
You know, it's not the first time. Dole Pineapple, Hawaii, and Nicaragua, and I mean, you know, it was a century ago. But Karl Rove, I guess, has been quoted as saying that Mark Hanna, who was McKinley's right-hand man, it was his role model. American Empire, the British, of course, turned it into an art form. We just did it occasionally around the world, and we did it relatively quietly, or we always tried to figure out a good rationalization.
When Bush was just in the Philippines, he made a sort of tactless admission, but one that sort of reflects his thinking, which was he told the Filipinos that they should look for the examples of democracy in their own past in the U.S. occupation of the Philippines and the war that took the Philippines from Spain in 1898 and made it into a U.S. colony. And, you know, of course, Filipinos were very offended by this because basically it was saying that the most democratic period of Filipino history was when it was a U.S. colony. But it
right.
sort of indicates what the thinking of the Bush administration is when they kind of let their hair down on these things.
it was like patting them on the head and saying, you were good little colonial subjects, and wasn't that a wonderful time? I think what it was it reflected the fact that George Bush has never read history. But we're speaking with David Bacon. David, can you stick around just for another 5 minutes here? We got about a 4 minute break, and then 5 minutes after that. I want you to give people information on where they can find stuff about this on the internet. And I want you to repeat the story that we started the hour with. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
The house needs painting, the kids need braces, and your car just died. Looks like you need a loan. But will you get it? It all depends on what lenders see in your credit report, which is why you should check out freecreditreport.com. Log on, and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report and whether everything's accurate. Don't delay. See your credit report instantly. Make sure your credit's ready when you need it with freecreditreport.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I want everyone to listen up and understand clearly. We need some good weekday programming ideas. I don't know why no one is writing this down.
Oh, geez. Oops.
We need some good weekday programming ideas that will appeal to all angles and opinions of all listeners. Any ideas? Johnson.
Oh, you said the wrong name.
It's Jameson, sir.
Jackson, Johnson, Jasper, whatever.
Maybe we can pick up Limbaugh and convince him to move more to the middle.
That's good. Get out of my office. Yeah, get out. Jeez. You're an idiot.
Durr.
Spicoli.
It's Smith, sir.
Yeah. Give me something good.
Why don't we just have some shows that will appeal to everyone's opinion? It'll make the listener base more diverse and make for a good show.
A talk show that everyone will listen to because their opinions will be supported by other listeners and welcomed by the show host. That's brilliant. Good job, Swanson.
You're on the ball.
Everyone take this next holiday off.
Wait, someone has to work. Doug Steffen's live.
Come on.
The
best in progressive talk radio, weekdays, on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda, I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the i.e. America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes.
said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back to our program. Did you know that terrorists were caught in the United States of America with sodium cyanide bombs, other bombs, illegal weapons, hate literature, fake IDs, chemicals including hydrochloric acid and nitric acid? Planning a terrorist action? No, you probably didn't know. For some reason, only a local CBS affiliate reported on it. Turns out the terrorists were conservative white guys. Can you imagine how that story would be playing? This happened in Texas. We're going to get to that later on in the hour. Did you know that the Pentagon has started its own news outlet? This to get around the ban on domestic activities, the ban on domestic propaganda activities that was put into law against the State Department and the U.S. Information Agency. So the Department of Defense isn't covered by that law, so they've set up their own network in Baghdad. We're talking with David Bacon, an independent labor analyst and journalist who was recently in Iraq. And number one, David, just repeat real quickly what our breaking story out of the top of the hour was. And then number two, I'd like to get your impression of Iraq, and I got a caller here on the line who's got a question for you.
Sure. Well, the story is that the occupation forces in Iraq arrested eight leaders of Iraq's two main union federations that have been organized since the fall of the Saddam Hussein regime, and took them into detention on Saturday, releasing them a day later, but in the process trashing their offices in the middle of the central bus station in downtown Baghdad.
So it's we have declared war, or at least we have put the fear of God into the trade unions in the country of Iraq. That's the new Bush policy. David, what was your impression of Iraq? What's your sense of what's going on there?
Well, Iraq is a highly industrialized country, and one that was actually quite a rich country 20 or 25 years ago. And so one of the first impressions you get of Iraq is kind of how destroyed the country has become under the impact of the war against Iran back in the 1980s, but especially the economic sanctions during the 1990s and then the impact of this last war. So you see the streets are kind of still filled with rubble. The buildings that were destroyed in the war haven't been rebuilt. Even though Congress has appropriated this $87 billion for reconstruction, in the eyes of people who live in Baghdad, and it's a big city with 5 million people there, they can't see very much evidence of that reconstruction in any way that benefits them.
Well, isn't an awful lot of that reconstruction money going to rebuild oil pipelines, rebuild roads to get to the pipelines, rebuild factories that will then be sold off to crony buddies of the Bush administration, rebuild roads and infrastructure to make those factories work?
That's right, and primarily it is the oil industry, as you point out. That's what the Bush administration is really after in Iraq, is they want the oil. And so you have Halliburton and their subsidiary Kellogg Brown and Root doing reconstruction of the oil pipelines. You have the Bechtel Corporation from San Francisco rebuilding the port of Umm Qasr in the south of Iraq so that they can get that oil onto ships and out into the Persian Gulf. So that's what the reconstruction is really paying for. That plus, you know, they're trying to create a secure enough situation so that the oil extraction industries can function. So we're paying for a huge military occupation at the same time.
Yeah. David, I'm also interested in your sense of you know, what the average Iraqi thinks of this. Are we, quote, winning a war, end quote? What is their mission there? I'd like to ask you those questions. I know that Armin is on the line, and he's got a question for you. We've got a break here. It's going to take about 2.5 minutes. Can you stick around for another 5 minutes with us?
Be a pleasure.
Okay, great. If you can stick around through this break, then we'll pick this up on the other side. And Armin, hang on the line, and we'll get your question in for David Bacon as well. We're speaking with David Bacon. David, real quickly, is there a URL?
Yes, there is. It's www.progressive.org. That's the Progressive magazine, and they have an article about this.
Great. Okay, we're talking with David Bacon. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The world's environmental problems seem ever larger, but an author says people should think small. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A popular bumper sticker urges you to think globally, act locally. But focusing too much on the world's big problems can make you feel like giving up, according to David Suzuki. He's an award-winning scientist and co-author of a new book called Good News for a Change.
Environmentalists get into the rut of constantly warning that the sky is falling, you know, that we're going into global warming, ozone depletion, deforestation, desertification. And we get locked into the mentality that it's crisis, 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 and we've got to respond to it. But we don't spend, I think, enough time saying, what are the alternatives? Are there, in fact, solutions? Or are we just on an irreversible path that we can't get off?
Suzuki says we can turn things around, but time is running out.
There is absolutely no doubt that we have changed the makeup of the atmosphere, that the planet is getting warmer, and that we are causing imminent catastrophic consequences.
Suzuki says people must find ways to change their households and their communities without losing heart.
If you keep focusing on the global picture, it is so huge and so overwhelming, it tends to paralyze you. People feel totally disempowered because they feel insignificant. So it's important to understand that we're in a global eco-collapse, but we've got to be focused locally because otherwise one is rendered helpless.
Suzuki says people should contact elected officials about the big issues and work on things they can change close to home. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court, Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. The Organic Wine Company, by the way, just wanted to give you a tip. They have some great holiday gift, wine selections of organic wine from France. If you want to thumb your nose at those on faux news who are promoting boycotts of French goods, some great, you know, three bottles at a time, six bottles, at a, depending on what you want to spend and who you want to send it to, whether you want champagne, red wine, whatever. 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE, just so you know about it. And we are talking with David Bacon, an independent labor analyst and journalist. David just came back from Iraq. He is on the line. He told us that on Saturday, we busted a bunch of bad guys in Iraq. Yes, indeed, folks, we got them. Who were they? They were union organizers. Yes, we cannot have union organizers in Iraq. It's just intolerable. It's not the conservative way. No. David, welcome back.
I'm glad to be with you, Tom.
Yeah, pardon my rant here. It's every now and then just get going. Let me bring Armand in here. He's been patiently waiting to ask you a question. Armand, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. You're in Florida, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. One quick comment, though. Isn't it funny how it's always okay when the Bush crime family forms their own union?
Yeah. Well, they don't call it a union. I mean, it's a corporation and corporations within corporations and trade associations and lobbyists and, you know, capital can organize all it wants in this country. If labor tries to organize, look out.
Yeah.
Anyhow, your question, Armand.
Oh, my question, David.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people don't realize. I'll get to the question real quick. I know you got to move on. You know, Iraq was one of the most sophisticated civilizations in the Mid East, and not only that, they had free care, free education. But the question I have is, if you could ask Bush Lauer one, Mr. Bush, how's that restored democracy fate going? What do you think he'd say?
Thanks, Armand.
Well,
a little rhetorical question for you there, David. Armand, I appreciate the call.
Well, I think you have a good point there, Armand, because one of the things that Bush is doing here is he is equating the free market with democracy.
Right.
So he's saying that if U.S. corporations can come into Iraq and they can operate freely and they can buy whatever they want and they can, you know, pay people whatever they want, that this is the same thing as democracy. So he doesn't really have anything to say about unions or people's union rights or about the economic conditions that people have to live under. That's just sort of swept under the rug. And democracy in his world is equated with the freedom of big companies to make as much profit as they can. That's what he thinks
democracy
is all about.
You know, Bush and Cheney basically laid this out during the last election campaign when they said that they wanted to run the government like a corporation. I mean, they obviously don't understand what a democracy is.
That's right. They have their own very, very biased version of it. And, you know, where they have gone in militarily, generally speaking, this is what they've said, is that the free market and democracy are the same thing.
Yeah, and they're very different things. They're not mutually opposed. I mean, a free market, in fact, is a vital and important thing in a democracy, but it is not what a democracy is.
A democracy includes, you know, the rights of working people. It includes the ability of people to survive economically, to have jobs that pay them decent wages, that are secure, that have, as Armand was pointing out, for instance, that Iraq in past years had a free medical system, it had a free education system, it was one of the most industrialized countries in the Middle East. You know, those are parts of a democracy, too, and those are the parts of the democracy that the Bush administration is not paying any attention to in Iraq, because that's not what's being rebuilt. And so in this supposed war to win over the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, I think that they're just sort of bypassing the main elements that affect people's lives, their jobs, their income, you know, their health care, their education for their kids. These are the things that, in the eyes of Iraqi people, they want to see improved here. That's what democracy means to them.
Yeah, and it definitely doesn't mean it to this administration. I mean, you just look at the damage that they're doing to the United States of America. It is mind-boggling. Well, last question here, David, and I'll let you go. I know you've got a busy day. I'm wondering, you know, the Bush administration, now they've started their own their own, you know, faux news wasn't enough for them. They've got to have faux news. They're running C-SPAN Baghdad. It's going to start in 2 weeks. The Department of Defense is going to be providing live satellite feeds to all of our networks. And presumably it's going to be stuff like, you know, heart-touching documentaries on a school that we just helped rebuild. And the Bush administration is saying, hey, everything is wonderful in Iraq. You guys are paying too much attention pointing out the dangers. And then the foreign press that I'm reading, you know, you read the British press, and in particular the other English language presses around the world, and the German press, which I read, you find this sense of this vast underreporting in the United States of the number of people who are wounded and injured and attacked. You know, 20, 30 attacks a day on average. I mean, we never hear about those. We're not hearing about the civilian casualties. It wasn't reported in the United States that the Iraqi governing council was, or the Iraqi, you know, the fiction of a government that's there was just ordered by the U.S. military to stop counting Iraqi casualties and these kind of things. You were on the ground there. What was your sense of, you know, what's going on in that regard?
Well, I think that Iraq is still at war. There's still a guerrilla war going on there. That's something that's not very convenient for the Bush administration to report. As you say, they're trying to present this image that things are getting better and everything is under control. And that's obviously not what's going on. And they're having a harder and harder time trying to keep this image together. So first during the war, we had this idea of the embedded journalists, that people would travel around with the troops and that would give them a favorable image to project in newspapers and on televisions in the U.S. now. And now they want to set up their own news agency so that they can kind of manufacture their own news and kind of spoon feed it to us here too. And for journalists, I think this is a big problem. I think that reporters and photographers and journalists in the United States, we have some big questions and a big problem in front of us, and that is, are we going to go along with this? Are we really independent people here? And are we going to report the news the way it really is? Or are we going to give the Bush administration the news that it wants to hear and it wants people in this country to hear?
Yeah, and increasingly we're seeing, you know, the corporate news. Look at ABC with Kucinich here last week. You know, they're playing gotcha just like the administration does. You know, you upset us, we'll stop covering your campaign. And it's just it's bizarre. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. And Roy in New Mexico has a question for you, David. Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom. Just tune in. I've been moving around all morning. I saw probably about 6 weeks ago that about 28,000 teachers were fired. And I saw it was like a blip on BuzzFlash, and that was it. And I was wondering if your guest had any other ideas on that or any other information.
Okay, we're speaking with journalist David Bacon. David, your knowledge of that? Thanks, Roy, for the call.
Yes, that's true. When the occupation started, the occupation authorities fired wholesale huge waves of people in the public sector in Iraq, and teachers were among that group. And this was called de-bathification. But and certainly there were many people who belonged to the Ba'ath Party who were fired. But in many cases, people had to belong who had certain jobs in Iraq had to belong to the Ba'ath Party as sort of a condition of their employment. So the Bush administration didn't try to distinguish to the governing party because they needed a job, and those people who were responsible for carrying out the repression and the repressive policies of Saddam Hussein. So they just fired everybody, and that caused a huge crisis among working people in Iraq because, you know, unemployment was very high to begin with, and then that just sort of dumped a whole lot more people onto the unemployment lines there. And since then, they've actually had to hire some of those people back because, after all, who was going to provide the medical care? Who were going to provide the, you know, instruction for students in the school? So, you know, the policy of the occupation as it's, you know, affected working people has been basically chaotic. You know, the Bush administration hasn't really known what to do other than kind of implement its hostility towards the idea that workers would get organized and try and get some control of their own over their own jobs and their own workplaces.
Remarkable. David, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was my pleasure.
I truly appreciate your joining us. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This is Tom Hartman on the thanks. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 44 minutes after the hour, 16 minutes before the hour, as you choose. And I mentioned this. I'll just give you the story as it reads in Utney Reader. The Bush administration has decided to stop whining about negative reporting on Iraq and simply begin its own news channel, C-SPAN Baghdad, with all information carefully chosen by the Department of Defense. And this appears to be an attempt to circumvent laws in the United States against the government promulgating propaganda. Because those laws don't forbid, see, they forbid the government from promulgating propaganda within the United States. But if the Defense Department sets up its own news outlet in Iraq, is that propaganda? It doesn't matter. I mean, they could even call it propaganda. It's not being done domestically, even though it's going to be carried by all the domestic news outlets. And, of course, the Washington Post didn't even, you know, raise the issue. I mean, this huge insult to the free press in the United States, what the remnant of the free press in the United States. The opening paragraph of today's Washington Post story. Oh, I'm sorry. This is from Saturday. Oh, gee, this is a month ago. This is Saturday, November 15. In an escalation of White House efforts to circumvent what President Bush calls the news media filter, the Pentagon plans to launch. Okay, so now it's happened. Plans to launch a 24-hour satellite channel from Baghdad to make it easier for U.S. television stations to air government-authorized news about Iraq. So now it's happening. Now it's happening. They are bringing this thing into being. Yeah, December 11th, Utney Reader published this thing. It's out. Let me tell you about the poison gas plot. Get this. The amazing part about this is not that another Tim McVeigh kind of terrorist was found in the United States and stopped, because there's no doubt quite a few of them out there, and we are busting them periodically. What's amazing about this is that if this guy had been brown-skinned or Islamic, and particularly if he had been Islamic and a citizen of some country other than the United States, this would have been in 32-point type across the top of every single newspaper in America. It would have been a huge screaming headline, 3-inch high letters. Terrorists found in USA. And here's the story. I'll read you the first two paragraphs from the article as it ran in WorldNet Daily. The discovery of a sodium cyanide bomb, a stockpile of components needed to make other chemical weapons, and a cache of illegal arms has led to the arrest of three suspected domestic terrorists and prompted a nationwide hunt for possible co-conspirators who could be plotting a mass casualty attack somewhere in the United States. KTVT-TV, the CBS affiliate in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, reports federal agents have served hundreds of subpoenas across the country in the counterterrorism case, which has been the subject of President Bush's daily intelligence briefings. This is not a secret, folks. This is not a secret. Why are our media not telling us about it? As thememoryhole.org points out, the only media that saw fit to report about this terrorist plot within the U.S. were a few newspapers and TV stations in Texas. The web-based news outlet WorldNet Daily ran a story about it, but Google News shows there hasn't been a word in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, or any other big media outlet. If white Christians in the United States make bombs, cyanide-based weapons of mass destruction, and have plans to use them, that apparently is not news in the United States. It's only when minorities or Muslims do it. Here you got Jose Padilla, a U.S. citizen who has been held in detention without access to an attorney, can't call his family, locked down in solitary confinement for going on a year now, because he had the audacity to convert to Islam and check out a website that gave instructions for building a dirty bomb. That's what he's been charged with so far. So he hasn't been charged with anything, but that's the rationale that's been given. He was looking at a website. See, they can track now, the Patriot Act, they can track every website you look at. They don't have to tell you. In fact, if your ISP tries to tell you that John Ashcroft is tracking your use of websites, your ISP has committed a crime. Remarkable news today. Absolutely remarkable news. Pentagon finds mistakes by Halliburton. What a surprise. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We will be back right after these messages.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout-out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's to my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, when corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working in middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. Where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets. The eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
She thought I was all right in a sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, "Don't I know you from the cinematographer's party?" I said, "Who am I to blow against the wind? I know, I know.
Welcome back. You're in the real free speech zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Representative Nick Smith is still trying to weasel out of discussing whether or not he was bribed. Has the Justice Department begun an investigation since he confessed to witnessing a bribery attempt on a national on a talk radio station or and in print? Well, apparently not. Has the media kept up on this? Well, apparently not. But I am. And I would suggest that you call, if you're in Michigan, and I know we are on WSDS in Ypsilanti, Michigan. If you're one of our listeners on WSDS, I encourage you to call Representative Smith's office, even if he's not your congressman in that particular part of the state. I'm not sure how the state is broken out. Nonetheless, call area code 202-224-3121 and say, when are you going to come clean here, Nick? When are you going to tell us who tried to bribe you? And if you're not in Michigan or if you're anywhere else in the United States, you might want to call that same number, ask for your congressperson or your senator and say, when are you guys going to investigate an attempted bribery on the floor of the House of Representatives at 3 o'clock in the morning when Denny Hastert is stretching out for 3 hours the vote on the Medicaid bill, breaking rules and conventions that go all the way back to the founding of this country? Denny Hastert, apparently, was the briber, or the bribe offerer, either Denny Hastert or Tommy Thompson or both. I mean, that's sure what it looks like if you look at the film, as they say. And Representative Smith said one of them offered to give his son $100,000 if he would vote yes. And he ultimately didn't. He turned down the money. Which I think is why he was bragging about it. I mean, if he had taken the money, all those guys who took the money, I don't think they said a word. But open and blatant attempts at bribery on the floor of the House of Representatives, check it out. In the meantime, the Pentagon inquiry finds mistakes by Halliburton. Oh, gee, the Army overcharged $61 million by Halliburton. And the newspaper today, the headline calls it a mistake. Yes, a mistake. This is... We have to get active about this stuff. Some of it is so outrageous it's almost humorous, but we got to get active. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the Truth Arena. Stay tuned.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational, and you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't
you
put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal?
Goof?
Yeah. I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
The IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A Pentagon audit has found Vice President Dick Cheney's former company may have overcharged the Army by $1.09 per gallon for nearly 57 million gallons of gasoline delivered to citizens in Iraq, senior defense officials say. Auditors found potential overcharges of up to $61 million for gasoline that a Halliburton subsidiary delivered as part of its no-bid contract to help rebuild Iraq's oil industry. Many Democrats have criticized the Halliburton contracts, suggesting that they were a political payoff for a company with strong ties to the GOP and whose executives gave generously to the Bush campaign. Cluster munitions fired by U.S. and British forces killed or wounded more than 1,000 Iraqi civilians during the invasion last spring and continue to inflict casualties among the population, a study by a leading human rights group says. In addition to these preventable losses, Human Rights Watch said dozens of civilians died in about 50 American attacks on specific targets in civilian neighborhoods in efforts to kill Saddam Hussein and other fugitive leaders. None of those strikes achieved their purpose, even though U.S. forces were tracking the targets through intercepted phone calls and other intelligence information, it said. A Time magazine reporter suffered severe shrapnel wounds and lost his hand when he tried to throw away a grenade tossed into a Humvee he was riding in with a Time photographer and two U.S. soldiers, colleagues said Thursday. Time senior correspondent Michael Weisskopf and contributing photographer James Noctway were traveling with a U.S. Army patrol in Baghdad Wednesday night when the attack occurred, a statement from Time managing editor Jim Kelly said. The soldiers were also wounded, the U.S. military said, but gave no further information. Time would not offer details on the incident, but a memo sent to Weisskopf's former colleagues at the Washington Post said he picked up the grenade and tossed it out of the Humvee. It exploded, blowing off his hand and wounding him in the chest and arms. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Moose are getting trashy in Anchorage. The long-legged ungulates that have snacked on your garden and nibbled away at your favorite trees are now turning to your trash in what may be the city's newest wildlife problem. A few moose have apparently learned to rip open garbage bags and raid trash containers. It's an unexpected twist to a similar issue involving bears during the summer. The problem has grown more widespread in the past year, according to moose watchers. This is Don Waller in New York. Have a good weekend.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout-out to
to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried, and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
To the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And today it's Friday afternoon. It's 1 o'clock Eastern Time, and wherever you may be listening, the second hour of our program. And we're honored and pleased again to have brunch with Bernie Sanders. Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent representative from Vermont, is on the line with us. Congressman Sanders, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. It is nice to be with you, Tom, and a happy holidays to all of the listeners.
Thank you. And to you and yours, Bernie. What's up in Congress this week?
Congress is not in session this week.
Okay.
But not much is up there, but they've done enough damage for a while, and I think we can talk about that. And, Tom, before I get going on what's going on in Congress, I want to congratulate you and your show, because one of the most important issues facing America, in my view, is the whole issue of media consolidation and corporate ownership of the media, including radio. And it is terribly important that we hear alternative points of view. And your station and your show is one of those points of view that's out there. So I congratulate you for putting together the show, and keep up the great work. America needs to hear voices that represent ordinary people rather than just big money interests.
Well, thank you, Bernie. That's very kind of you. And just the last week or the week before, we picked up WSDS in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And next week, or actually I think it's going to be in 2 weeks, we're going to be going live on the air on a Clear Channel station in Grand Rapids, Michigan, up opposite Rush Limbaugh.
That's great.
And we're taking on the conservatives all across the country, and it's working and it's growing.
Many of your listeners should be asking themselves how it is that a nation which is pretty evenly divided, I'm not going to suggest this is a progressive country, but it surely is not an extreme right-wing country. Al Gore, Nader, got more votes than Bush and Buchanan. And yet how is it that when we turn on talk radio, virtually all that we hear are debates between the right-wing and the extreme right-wing? There's something wrong there. And I think the people of this country got to wake up and fight for changes in radio.
Yeah, and how, what are the best ways to do that, in your opinion?
Well, I'm glad, for a start, in Congress what we're dealing with, as you know, is strong opposition to this recent FCC decision, which allowed even further deregulation of media, will create the nightmare of even fewer large corporations controlling what we see, hear, and read, will allow for the kind of cross-ownership of media that we have never seen before. In other words, in a given community, you can have one corporate voice owning television stations, radio stations, and the local newspaper. That does not sound to me like America. It sounds more like the old Soviet Union. Now, what we can do is obviously join those of us in Congress who are fighting against that, begin discussing how we can have a media which is much more balanced than currently, but at the local level. I'm glad to hear you telling me that you are now on a Clear Channel radio station.
Actually, it'll be the second one that we're on.
That's good, because Clear Channel clearly nationally is very, very much far to the right. And I think what we need is citizens to go and call up their local radio station, Clear Channel or anybody else, and say, listen, I've been listening to your radio station. I checked your website. All you got is right-wing nuts on the air. How about allowing those of us who hold a different opinion to have a voice, whether it's the Tom Hartman Show or somebody else? We want that voice. And you know what? If the radio stations are refusing to do that, people should begin to think about doing what the right wing is doing, and that is boycotting, writing letters. There are sponsors on that show. And I think we have got to work at the local level, at the state level, and certainly in Congress to open up media to all points of view.
Yeah, I agree. And what's interesting is that there is already a boycott of right-wing talk radio, and the industry doesn't realize it. What has happened in the last 8 or 10 years is that Democrats and progressives alike have just stopped listening to right-wing talk radio. And you can tell, you know, when I first started back in talk radio, I mean, I was in radio years ago for a decade back in the 60s and 70s, but it was music radio, and I did news for 7 years. But when I started in talk radio, I was operating on the assumption that my listeners were going to be equally divided between conservatives and progressives. And I love it when conservatives call me and try and debate me. I wish more would. I get maybe, you know, just two or three a week, and that's about it. And the loyal opposition, in fact, you know, sometimes you wonder if maybe they're on the payroll of the Heritage Foundation or something, because they're so good about calling, you know, with the talking points. And God bless them. I wish more conservatives would call me. But what I've discovered is that radio is such an intimate medium. I mean, you hear it right inside your head. It's not like a TV that's on the other side of the room that you can kind of walk around. It's such an intimate medium that I am convinced that conservative radio, talk radio, really is only listened to by conservatives, and progressive or liberal or democratic talk radio would only be listened to by Democrats. And so the boycott is already going on. People just are not tuning in. And what I'm noticing now, as we contact radio stations, and this show continues to grow, is that when we contact radio stations in a market where there's more than one conservative voice, where you've got O'Reilly fighting with Limbaugh, fighting with Prager, for example, and we say, hey, you know, why are you competing with two other stations for half the market? We can deliver the entire other half of the market to you. Mm-hmm. And they do this forehead slap and go, whoa, I never thought of that.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, from a commercial point of view, there's a whole lot of listeners out there who would like to hear something other than Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. From a point of view of a vibrant democracy, it just ain't right that the only point of view heard on radio is extreme right-wing, when this is not an extreme right-wing country. So I would hope that the listeners would begin to start contacting their local radio stations, ask for diversity on the airwaves.
Yeah. Amen. And it's happening. It's coming. I think the pendulum is swinging back.
Well, I hope so. You know, and one of the reasons, and I want to get into this for a moment if I could, Tom, is not just how the right wing interprets an event or their views toward Bush or Bill Clinton or whatever. What's more important to me is the huge amount of public discourse that is completely ignored by corporate radio. Whole areas of great importance to the American people get, at best, short shrift and sometimes not discussed at all. I mean, for example, the issue we are discussing right now, corporate control over the media and the fact that fewer and fewer large companies control what we see, hear, and read, how often is that discussed on conservative radio?
Never.
There was a study that recently came out in the American Journalism Review, and they did a study about the kind of coverage that this whole issue of media consolidation and the FCC received in the media. And I'm sure you will not be shocked to know that many important media almost ignored this issue completely.
Yeah, yeah. It's it's, you know, one of many. I mean, it's
one of many. That's right.
We had on in the last hour. I don't think you heard it, but David Bacon was on. He just came back from Iraq, and on Saturday, well, let me just read you this thing. This is gonna curl your toes here, Bernie. U.S. occupation forces in Iraq escalated their efforts to paralyze Iraq's new labor unions with a series of arrests this weekend. On Saturday, a convoy of 10 Humvees and personnel carriers descended on the old headquarters building of the Transport and Communication Workers Union in Baghdad's central bus station, which has been used since June as the office of the Iraqi Workers Federation of Trade Unions. 20 soldiers jumped out, stormed into the building, put handcuffs on 8 members of the Federation's executive board, and took them into detention.
Wow.
Now, have you heard about that on Fox News or even on ABC, CBS, or NBC? It happened, you know, last weekend.
Incredible. Incredible. That is, but you're right. So this talks about our whole effort to, quote-unquote, democratize Iraq. I guess people in Iraq were fighting for workers' rights, and wages there are abysmally low. Unemployment is very high. They are now what? Considered terrorists and enemies?
Well, they're not even calling them terrorists. What they're saying is we're getting ready to sell these government-owned businesses off to American corporations, and they don't want any stinking unions. We don't want those stinking unions. Is there? And they have actually outright barred, apparently, according to this journalist David Bacon, who was on last hour. They have actually barred some unions in some areas. They haven't done it right across the board. Instead, what they're doing is intimidation tactics.
So the two issues here is why aren't the American people hearing about this? And second of all, the reality of what's happening in terms of, quote-unquote, democratization of Iraq.
And third, I'd say, how the Bush administration thinks that what they're doing in Iraq is consistent with democracy and it's a reflection of what they'd like to do in America.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, the anti-union efforts in America, and as you know, there were just, interestingly enough, demonstrations all over this country the other day making the point that at a time when workers in unions earn about 30% more than non-union workers doing the same work, it is getting harder and harder and harder for workers to be able to form unions because the laws are so tilted in the favor of the companies.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a shame. Bernie, we got about 3 minutes left before we have a commercial break. What is on your mind about what happened recently in Congress?
Well,
you'd like to talk to the in that.
One of the points that is not getting a lot of discussion, Tom, that we need to discuss is the nature of job creation in America. I think we're all aware that under President Bush, we have lost approximately 3 million jobs. Some 90% of them are manufacturing jobs, which pay people a decent wage. There was a study that came out recently which talks about the new jobs that are being created in America. And this study indicates they think there will be some decent job creation in the next couple of years. The point is that the new jobs that are being created will pay about 20% less than the old jobs that are being lost. And I call this phenomenon the Walmartization of America. A job is, in fact, not a job. For an unemployment statistics, a job is a job. But in reality, it makes a difference whether you have a job in manufacturing, for example, that pays you $43,000 a year, which is about the average pay in manufacturing, which gives you decent health care, pension plan, or whatever, as opposed to a job in Walmart, which will pay you poverty wages and minimal benefits. And one of the issues that we need a lot of discussing about is the new kinds of jobs that are being created, why they are so low wage, why the benefits are minimal, how this relates to our disastrous trade policy through which corporations are throwing American workers out on the street, moving to China, where they're paying people 20 or 30 cents an hour. So one of the issues that some of us are working on in the U.S. Congress right now is to transform our trade policy, stop American companies from laying off American workers and moving to China, create an economy not only where we have high levels of employment, but equally important, where these jobs pay people a middle-class living wage.
Yeah, and it's important, I think, to note that this isn't something, as much as we want to vilify, or it's as much fun as it is to vilify George W. Bush, this is something that really started picking up steam under the Clinton administration.
That is absolutely right. They're the ones who gave us NAFTA. And I should tell you, I was in Mexico a couple of weeks ago with a congressional delegation, taking a look at the impact that NAFTA has had on Mexico.
Bernie, I got to ask you to hold that story, and we'll pick it up on the other end. We've also got John in Long Beach with a question for you. John, hang on the line. We'll take your call after the break. If anybody else would like to call, questions for Congressman Bernie Sanders, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiance for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
My company designs and builds offices for large corporations. After 10 years in business, I can handle just about any construction problem. But paying my bills on time, that's not always so easy.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It helps me build my business.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush.
Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy.
No, sure. You know what I'm talking about.
The
Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Vengeful aspects became suspect and bending low as if to hear. Well, in the armies who ceased advancing because the people held their ear. Shepherds and the soldiers, well, they laid beneath the stars, exchanging visions and laying arms, oh, to waste in the dust, in the form of shining valleys, oh, where the pure air.
And welcome back, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking today. It's Friday afternoon, our second hour of brunch with Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont. And Bernie, we've got John. Oh, you were let me let you finish your story here. And you were talking about going down to Mexico, and then we'll pick up John from Long Beach's question. We've got about 5 minutes in this segment, then we take a break, and then we've got 17 minutes to talk.
Okay, so what I just wanted to say is that many listeners will say, well, yeah, NAFTA was really bad for workers in the United States. Yeah, we lost a lot of decent-paying jobs. Yeah, wages went down. But at least the poor people in Mexico saw an improvement in their standard of living. And if you think that, you are dead wrong. What my trip told me, and what the facts are very clear about, is that as a result of NAFTA, in Mexico, workers are working for lower wages, more people are working for minimum wage jobs, and especially in the rural areas, large numbers of small family farmers whose families have been on the land for generations have been driven off of the land. They've come to the large cities. Some of them have come over the border illegally. So if you think NAFTA was good for Mexican workers, you're wrong, and it hasn't been good for American workers or Canadian workers. It has, of course, been good for the large multinationals.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote the NAFTA and GATT treaties in the first place? I mean, who participated?
That is of course, true.
Yeah, so they write a law for their benefit, and
it
guess
works
what? They benefit.
Benefit.
Yeah, which reminds me, I want to get to this maybe in the next segment after we take John's call. The White House yesterday categorically refused to answer questions about why President Bush's longtime business associate, this is the guy who got him out of the SEC investigation and also earned him almost $1 million in profit with Harkin Oil, was allowed to craft key portions of the Medicare bill, which could send millions of dollars to his own company.
We can go on and on that disastrous Medicare bill, but that was certainly written by the special interest for the special interests.
Well, let's get to that after we get to John's question. John in Long Beach, California is on the line. John, thank you for calling. Thanks for waiting over the break. You're welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Good morning to Bernie.
Good morning.
I can't tell you what a great honor it is to speak to you, Bernie. I don't say that lightly because I very seldom ever say that to anyone. But ever since I saw you dressed down Greenspan on Congress, I've looked at you as a great, fantastic person. If you'd run for president, I'd vote for you tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Don.
The question is, and I don't say this officially, but I consider the people on the Hill, the inhabitants on the Hill as being criminals because of the 2002 debacle and because of the illegal invasion of Iraq. Is there any possible way that the RICO law could be used against them?
Well, RICO laws are state creatures, and they are not going to be relevant to members of the U.S. Congress. They may be, various states have recalled for governors and other officials, but that is not.
No, I think he was talking about RICO, the Organized Crime and Racketeering Acts.
Against these people that now in the administration that now holds this country in the grip of their whatever. Anyway,
well, John,
as if it was organized crime. We got about 30 seconds here before the break, Bernie.
Well, John, what I think is the way to change what goes on in Washington is the old-fashioned way, and that is we've got to mobilize people, we've got to educate people, we've got to substantially raise the voter turnout, and we've got to throw these people out.
These
people who represent in corporate America and the wealthy, and we need a strong progressive movement to do that. I think that's the way we've got to go.
I hope so. Thank you, then.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for the call, John. Bernie, stand by. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back right after these words. Stay tuned.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's to my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The world's environmental problems seem ever larger, but an author says people should think small. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A popular bumper sticker urges you to think globally, act locally. But focusing too much on the world's big problems can make you feel like giving up, according to David Suzuki. He's an award-winning scientist and co-author of a new book called Good News for a Change.
Environmentalists get into the rut of constantly warning that the sky is falling, you know, that we're going into global warming, ozone depletion, deforestation, desertification. And we get locked into the mentality that it's crisis, 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 and we've got to respond to it. But we don't spend, I think, enough time saying, what are the alternatives? Are there, in fact, solutions? Or are we just on an irreversible path that we can't get off?
Suzuki says we can turn things around, but time is running out.
There is absolutely no doubt that we have changed the makeup of the atmosphere, that the planet is getting warmer, and that we are causing imminent catastrophic consequences.
Suzuki says people must find ways to change their households and their communities without losing heart.
If you keep focusing on the global picture, it is so huge and so overwhelming, it tends to paralyze you. People feel totally disempowered because they feel insignificant. So it's important to understand that we're in a global eco-collapse, but we've got to be focused locally because otherwise one is rendered helpless.
Suzuki says people should contact elected officials about the big issues and work on things they can change close to home. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I got a friend named Whiskey Sam. He was my boonie rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's better than not coming back at all. Many a good man I saw fall. And even now, every time I dream, I hear the men and the monkeys in the jungle scream. Drive on. It don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand. And I got a woman who knows her man. Drive on.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. We're talking today with Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, the second hour of Friday afternoon. And, Bernie, we've got a bunch of callers here. You were making the point that Mexico is not getting better as a result of NAFTA or GATT. I think we'd wrapped that up. Oh, and we talked about the RICO law. Was there anything you wanted to tag up here, wrap up before
only
we go to the
only that,
cones?
Tom. I want to get to the questions. But the main point, there is no political shortcut to transforming America. There's no magic way to do it. In my view, we're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way, organizing, knocking on doors, getting involved in the political process.
Yeah, amen. And using the Internet now to do it, too.
Absolutely. That's one tool. Important way of communication.
Yeah. Michael in Santa Fe. Oh, wait a minute. Robert in Santa Fe, or is that... Roberta in Santa Fe. I'm sorry. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Wonderful to have you take my call, Tom. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
Congressman Sanders, you were you obscure in your answer on who wrote GATT? Because I think I know and NAFTA?
Yeah.
I didn't hear your answer.
Well, what I was pointing out is I was just in NAFTA a few weeks ago.
Just in Mexico.
In Mexico. Just in NAFTA.
Yeah.
Right. And
Word here is that the NAFTA arrangement was written by our now elected, duly elected governor, who is Spanish royalty, and Cayoto, which means he's half Anglo, Governor Richardson, I believe, wrote that. And his mother is Spanish nobility, or Contessa, in Mexico. There's some controversy about that, and I don't think it's well known. The NAFTA Act, of course, is an egregious for the wealth.
But I think, Roberta, the point that I was the one who said it, not Bernie, is that these days there is almost no such thing as legislation, particularly legislation proposed by conservatives, whether they're Republicans or conservative Democrats, that doesn't have the hands of corporations and lobbyists all over it. And my point was that my recollection from when I was writing on equal protection, I was doing the research into this, was that the legislation that came to be known as NAFTA, or the treaty that came to be known as NAFTA, and the treaty that came to be known as the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, was largely helped to be written by corporations, corporate lawyers, lobbyists, and things like that. And Bernie, is that your understanding as well?
That's absolutely right, Tom. And your point is well taken. We can beat up on George Bush, but let's understand that NAFTA came within the Clinton administration, and if anything, Clinton was even a stronger free trader than is the current president.
That's, yeah, and Roberta's point then is
that's
that...
That's correct in my understanding, too, that Richardson did this under Clinton.
That's right.
And
that
Richardson played a role in this.
Being sent to the UN. My question, though, is I think it would be more clear if we did use the F word. I don't hear anyone in office in Washington calling a spade. We are in a fascist system now, and we can get rid of the personalities. He has pretty well entrenched a very fascist system in this country, and is going global with it to an egregious extent. And I think that just using the reactionary reform measure of going to the ballot box also is impotent, because we now know that the computers can be rearranged. The votes are not honest.
Roberta, do you really think that the rigging of the voting machines would last more than one or two election cycles before the people of the United States rose up and said enough?
Well, revolt. You know, I would like my gravestone to read, if I die in a fascist country, I would like it to read, I would rather be revolting. I don't think that we can trust that anymore.
Well, Roberta, let me just jump in and say this. I don't agree with you. I mean, if we were living in a truly fascist country, we would not be having this discussion over the airwaves. I would not be in the United States Congress. Dozens of other good people would not be in the Congress. And I think sometimes what happens is we take things to such an extreme that it results in political impotence. I think...
Well, it is reactionary.
It's reactionary. I mean, this is a guy who is controlled by large corporate America. No question about that. But the difference is, you know, in fascist countries, when you speak out, they arrest you and you go to jail. And you and I are on the radio talking about it. We're not going to be arrested. But I think what...
I'm not so sure about it.
And what sometimes happens, we become so pessimistic, we become so cynical, that that is what Tom DeLay and these guys want. And we don't get involved. We can beat Bush. I'm not, you know, a wide-eyed, naive utopian here. But I think we can make some strong steps forward if people get involved in the process. And to say not get involved, to say to people, well, don't get involved, it doesn't matter, I think that's counterproductive. So that's my view on that. So
great.
Get involved,
Roberta. Yeah, Roberta, you know, keep the good fight going, but keep it going. You know, don't give up. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, and Mildred in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Mildred, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie Sanders here.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm calling because I was trying to think of something, and if I'm not mistaken, there used to be a Persia, the country of Persia.
Yep.
And then Persia was divided into Iran and Iraq, and I think Britain did that. Is that correct?
Tom, I'm going to rely on you for Middle East history here.
Okay.
My recollection is that Persia was just what is now Iran, and that the Iranians are very proud of being Persians, and that they look down on the Iraqis as being Arabs,
well,
as opposed to being Persians.
Well, I always liked Persia, but because I thought of that, I wondered whether Britain was the one that separated Persia into Iran and Iraq.
Britain was ruling that whole area back there, Mildred.
Huh?
Britain was ruling that whole area. Britain brought together, they broke up Kurdistan, and they brought together the northern part of Kurdistan and Samaria, and they created Iraq.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, because in the New Mexican, you're always talking about writing letters to the editor. And one of the individuals in Santa Fe wrote a good letter to the editor, and it brought to my mind that at one time there were trouble with the Kurds, and I believe it was Clinton who went to protect the Kurds in the north, and then we had flyovers so Iraq wouldn't bother the Kurds. So in this letter to the editor, the gentleman wrote that there were three ways that he thought the simplest way to correct the problem in Iraq was to divide Iraq into the Sunnis, the Kurds, the Shiites, and what have you, and let them run their own governments. Why should we have Iraq to be like that? Now, what would the member of Congress say about that?
Well, I think we want to let the Iraqis run their own country. I think we want to get our troops out as soon as possible. I think we want to internationalize the need to bring stability there rather than just having American taxpayers and American soldiers do it. But I'm not of the opinion that we should be dividing Iraq up. I think that's the future of Iraq, as quickly as possible, has got to be given over to a democratic Iraq.
Yeah, and the other problem, and thanks for the call, Mildred, the other problem with that, Bernie, is a good friend of mine, actually, Gottfried Mueller, actually wrote a book about this guy. He's now 92 years old, and about 5 weeks ago I spent the weekend with him in Germany. He's a German. He lives in Germany. And he parachuted into Kurdistan during World War II to try to get them to get the oil for Hitler's war machine. He was on the German side of the war. And he designed the flag that the Kurdish independence movement is still using to this day. And back then, Kurdistan was a fairly large area, or the Kurds they were trying to restore Kurdistan. It had gotten broke up right after World War I, as I recall, by the Brits, or just before World War I. And the problem is that the breakup has already happened. Part of Kurdistan is now Turkey, and Turkey will have nothing to do with an independent Kurdistan. They're freaked out about it. Part of Kurdistan is just a fragment of Iraq, and, you know, it's all over there. So Mildred's suggestion, I think, would create a real mess.
But the more important point is, I don't think outsiders should be dividing up the country. I mean, these guys have been divided up historically. I think what we got to do now is let the Iraqi people, as soon as possible, make the decisions for themselves.
Yeah, amen. Even if it's to, even if it is to divide it up. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, and Michael is on the line. Michael in New Mexico. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be able to speak to Representative Sanders and yourself. The question I have is, I see a tremendous weakness in the, we'll say, the forces against the current regime of Mr. Bush. And unlike, say, what Newt Gingrich did in the early 90s, which many people still can remember, him standing with all those Republicans on the front stairs of the Congress, it was a great photo op. I don't see that in a group, either in the progressive Democrats, nor in, obviously, what controls the Democratic Party. I see Pelosi and Gephardt and
Daschle
as being very weak, very inconsistent in all of their stands. You know, I admire you being an independent, and I admire how eloquently you're able to speak about the issues. But as an individual, as I see with Bingaman here, we won't talk about our others.
Michael, I'm sorry to move you along, but I've got Heather in New York City here, too, and we're getting close to out of time. Is there a question in there?
Yeah. What do you see? What changes do you see?
Michael,
as far as...
Michael's characterization of the situation is pretty good. There's no question that the Democrats are weak, they're centrist, and so forth. And I think what we have got to do is look long view and short term. Short term, the goal is to get rid of George Bush. Long term, starting today, we have got to build a strong progressive political movement. We can make the Democratic Party or a third party stronger when people are organized at the grassroots level, when they're focusing on the real issues impacting middle class or working class people. So I think, Michael, what our job is to get involved in the process, organize people. Bring your United States senator, bring your congressman to a meeting with a couple of hundred people and say, look, this is what we need. If you can't do it, don't ask for our support. If that man or woman is not supportive, then you find somebody else who can run. But there is no substitute for strong grassroots activism.
And how long have you been in Congress and in politics?
I was elected in 90. I'm in the middle of my seventh term, 13 years.
Yeah, so I want our listeners to know that Bernie Sanders is not a wide-eyed idealist new to the process. You've seen it all. You've been through it all. You were mayor of Burlington before you were elected to.
Right. And I want to also say, in fairness to members of Congress, some of the very best members, people who are working 60, 70 hours a week, who represent working people, do not necessarily end up on the front pages of the national newspapers. But there are dozens and dozens of serious and good members of Congress.
Yeah, and hopefully someday
to be
hundreds.
Sure, but they're there.
Yeah, and we've got to make it hundreds instead of dozens.
That's right. We need to. That's right.
There you go. Heather in New York City is on the line. She's called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Heather, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I thought that it might be relevant to underscore the importance of shareholder activism as well as a methodology for making change. And I'll just hang up and let you comment on that.
Well, Heather, before you hang up, what do you mean by shareholder activism?
I believe that often when we're talking about writing to our senators and everything, that's a very useful option. However, in my opinion, the real change is when you hit companies where it counts, mm-hmm. in their pocket. And I work for an organization that rates companies on their ability to perform environmentally and socially. And this information is then given to the mainstream investment firms. And we are fairly well known within as an independent investment research entity. And we often rely on the fact that we hope that shareholder activism will have an increasingly important effect on the public relations of a firm and also on their financial standing in terms of legal liability and also regulatory from the regulatory aspect. And so we rely on these underlying elements to provide support to the value of our research. So that the more that we know that this is going to create either a financial or a reputational problem, yeah, or a regulatory problem for a company, the more power our investment research has.
I think, Tom, Heather makes a very good point. It is one of the approaches that people should use. I was involved in an issue where IBM had cut back on the pensions they had promised their workers. And IBM workers went to the shareholders meeting. They lost the vote ultimately, but they created enough havoc and ruckus that IBM rescinded on what they wanted to do. So I think taking on corporate America, especially these companies that are giving huge compensation packages to their CEO and cutting back on workers or doing bad things to the environment, is certainly one good strategy.
Yeah, I agree that it's an important step, but don't you think it's also important that we educate Americans that voting with your dollars is an oxymoron, that what that means is the people with most dollars get the most votes,
sure,
and that corporations are not democratic institutions, they don't have to respond to their shareholders.
But I'll tell you what happens. You're absolutely right. But on the other hand, what happens is when workers raise issues at the shareholder meetings, you can embarrass the corporate leadership, and sometimes you can force them to make some changes. It's just one tactic that I think should be exploited.
Yeah, I agree. Although it seems that the most important thing for us is to be reinvigorating democracy.
Absolutely.
At the grassroots,
sure,
level.
Absolutely, no question about that.
As you're discussing, we've just got about a minute left, and we're out of callers. What do you see? And if you want to stick around, we'll have 3 minutes after this break. We can,
sure,
wrap up the show. In fact, I'd like you to give us in 3 minutes at the end of the show here, which will be right after this break, your suggestions for exactly what people should say when they call their member of Congress, who they should ask for, how they should conduct themselves.
Good. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, good, because you're on the inside. You know exactly what it looks
and
like
I think
what it feels like.
One of the issues and the reason that shows like this are so important, Tom, is that a lot of people just don't know how their government works. They don't know how to access their government. And the end result is that the big money interests do, but ordinary people don't. So we'll talk about that.
Great. Okay. Stay tuned. We will hear that information, important information, from Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Well, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
An email that I received from Ken Melman, who's the campaign manager of Bush Cheney 04. Last week I warned you, he writes to me, that liberal special interests had pledged to spend over $400 million to defeat President Bush. Since my message to you, the Washington Post has revealed that these liberal groups have already raised over $185 million of their $400 million goal. They have already begun spending it on ads to defeat our president. This confirms that we will face a tough, well-funded Democrat attack campaign. While the Democrats will have endless soft money to spend attacking President Bush, I hope we'll have your help. Will you stand with President Bush and help build the strongest grassroots campaign in history by making a contribution today? Oh, President Bush, he just can't raise money. If they only had a brain.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Shake it up. Shake it up.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with Bernie Sanders on Friday afternoon here on the IE America Radio Network. Bernie, in our chat room, we've had four or five people. We're on a live chat room while the program's on. Four or five people have asked variations on the question to ask you about how can they do something about the Medicare bill or, you know, the apparent bribery of people. What's your advice?
Here's the point. You asked me, you know, let's talk about what people can do. First thought, let me do an advertisement for myself. We have a website which really has quite good information about what's going on in Congress. It's www.bernie.house.gov. Bernie.house.gov. Visit us. You'll get a good clue. Second of all, find out who your member of Congress is. Tom, you'd be amazed at how many people don't even know who represents them in the House of Representatives or even in the Senate. Third thing, be polite, but be bold. Members of Congress and the President of the United States work for you. So what you can do, if you're in a university, if you're in a workplace, you can bring together 100 people, and you can say, dear Congressman, please, at a mutually convenient time, come by and hold a meeting with us to answer questions that we have. I am amazed at how little pressure people are putting on their members of Congress to respond to their needs. And if the member of Congress doesn't have the time for you, understanding that they're busy, believe me, they are. They're in Washington a lot of the times. But people can work out mutually convenient times. If they don't have time for you, then you tell them you don't have time for them in November. Then get involved in the political process. Every member of Congress has a district office. They don't only work in Washington. They have staff in their district, in your town. Find out where that place is. Drop down. Talk to the staff. Get some information about what your member of Congress is doing. The best way to hold members of Congress accountable is to know what they are doing. Be informed. Earlier in the show, Tom, you mentioned how many conservatives are always on the telephone in these talk shows. Well, I think progressives and liberals should get on the phone as well to their members of Congress. And if ultimately these men and women are not doing the job that you want, well, we are a democracy. We have elections every 2 years, and you should respond to that accordingly.
Well said. Well said. And the website again was
Bernie.house.gov.
Yeah.
And then you you can put on the internet U.S. Congress. You will find a wealth of information about your member of Congress. Every member has a website. You will find the address of their district office. Let's start getting involved.
Amen. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us.
Tom, I've enjoyed it. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back.
From those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the fields that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A Pentagon audit has found Vice President Dick Cheney's former company may have overcharged the Army by $1.09 per gallon for nearly 57 million gallons of gasoline delivered to citizens in Iraq, senior defense officials say. Auditors found potential overcharges of up to $61 million for gasoline that a Halliburton subsidiary delivered as part of its no-bid contract to help rebuild Iraq's oil industry. Many Democrats have criticized the Halliburton contracts, suggesting that they were a political payoff for a company with strong ties to the GOP and whose executives gave generously to the Bush campaign. A Time magazine reporter suffered severe shrapnel wounds and lost his hand when he tried to throw away a grenade tossed into a Humvee he was riding in with a Time photographer and two U.S. soldiers, colleagues said Thursday. Time senior correspondent Michael Weisskopf and contributing photographer James Noctway were traveling with a U.S. Army patrol in Baghdad Wednesday night when the attack occurred, a statement from Time managing editor Jim Kelly said. The soldiers were also wounded, the U.S. military said, but gave no further information. Time would not offer details on the incident, but a memo sent to Weisskopf's former colleagues at the Washington Post said he picked up the grenade and tossed it out of the Humvee. It exploded, blowing off his hand and wounding him in the chest and arms. Iraqi rebels fired a salvo of mortar shells at coalition headquarters early Friday in an incident that highlighted their ability to strike at the seat of U.S. power in Iraq. There were no injuries in the attack, and only light damage was reported to a building in the so-called Green Zone, the downtown area housing the headquarters of the U.S.-led coalition, a military spokesman said. It was the first such attack since U.S. forces mounted a massive counteroffensive in Baghdad last month, dubbed Operation Iron Hammer, aimed at preventing strikes against the coalition's military and civilian targets. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Thieves stole the nose from a stuffed rhinoceros in a Norwegian museum, leading to fears that the horn was likely ground into a powder prized as an aphrodisiac in Asia. Thieves broke into the Bergen Museum on Norway's west coast and used an angle grinder to remove the horn from the rhino, which had been part of the museum's collection for more than a century. The December 2nd theft made national news Thursday after it was first reported by a local newspaper. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried, and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today, we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times is suggesting that the debacle that we saw yesterday, where the on the one hand the administration was saying, "Gee, we ought to only allow the contractors. The only contractors who should be allowed to participate in Iraq are those who are, you know, voted with us or supported us. Actually, no vote was ever taken in the UN, but those who supported us in our unilateral invasion of Iraq are." Our choice-based initiative, and not allow Canada
and Germany and France and Russia to bid on these things. And, of course, the Nathalie Lussault, the spokesperson for the French embassy in Washington, D.C., points out that this kind of flies in the face of the philosophical argument of the administration itself.
Well, concerning competition, of course, the more companies are allowed to bid for the contracts, the better it should be for Iraqis, because more competition and should lead to lower prices, especially from prominent countries. Whether it addresses the question of security interests of the United States, I'm not entitled to answer. I don't see very well the link, but this is a question that you should ask to American officials.
Yeah, well, the first part of that quote was the part that was the kicker. She said, I don't see how having competition is going to be a bad thing, because it'll lower prices, right? Wouldn't it? I mean, doesn't that seem to make a certain amount of sense? Well, yeah, okay, so what Paul Krugman is suggesting, Paul Krugman, excuse me, we had Paul on our program here a few weeks ago, and you know, the columnist for the New York Times, and in his op-ed today, a deliberate debacle, he says, I don't think this was mere incompetence. I think the administration's hardliners are deliberately sabotaging reconciliation between us and our allies. The between us and our allies, I added, but he, you know, to give you the, but anyhow, he said they're deliberately sabotaging reconciliations, and he doesn't think that it was just a screw up, that the same day that George Bush and the State Department and Colin Powell, the kind of, I don't want to characterize Bush as a moderate. I think Bush just kind of gets pushed left and right and left and right by the people around him, but this the same day that the moderates were sending James Baker, who is himself, I mean, in Republican circles anyway, a moderate. I wouldn't call him a moderate by any means. I think the guy's dangerous. I mean, he bragged about fixing the Florida election, but to a Russian audience recently. But they just sent him off to these various countries to try and ask them to forgive Iraq's debt. And at the very same time, you have the government saying, and we're going to spend billions and billions of dollars, and you can't have any of it. So don't lay claim to that $8 billion that Iraq owes you, Russia, anymore. Thank you very much. But by the way, don't also ask to have your contractors participate. Well, you know, it seems like incompetence, just massive incompetence. What Krugman is suggesting is what you're seeing here is a war within the administration. And that it's a continuation of what has been a long time war within the administration, and that's the war between the reactionaries and, on the one hand, the referred to as neocons, these super war hawks, the Pax Americana, the Imperius Americanus group, the Wolfowitz Cheney bunch, and those who actually understand how the world works and have some sense of democracy and freedom in the world, who, you know, basically is Colin Powell is the only one left over in that camp, and even he is suspect, but he's certainly far more moderate than the rest of them. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. David in San Francisco has some thoughts on this topic. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Had you seen these apparently Popular Mechanics, the newest issue of it, has got an expose, and apparently this expose has been known in some of the smaller press papers, that there was a weather forecaster or just a weather hobbyist that, in looking at some satellite photographs of Iraq, discovered that there was an oil pipeline that had been built just in the last few months. That went from the southern oil fields in Iraq straight down to Kuwait. Had you heard about this?
Yeah, I did. We talked about it on the air, in fact. The way that it was spotted was by the lights. Suddenly there were lights there.
Yeah, construction lights at night.
Yeah.
Right. They were doing a 24-hour job, apparently.
Well,
yep. In hearing about these the Halliburton overcharging, it's one thing to have Kuwaiti oil sold to Iraq. You know, Kuwait may claim that they're trying to overcharge in order.
Well, hang on just a second, David. It's not oil that they're selling to Iraq; it's gasoline. So, what you're suggesting is it's Iraqi oil that's being resold back to Iraq, that may well be the case. But they don't have the refinery capacity in Iraq right at the moment.
Well, I understand that, but it, see, this is the aspect of it that is looming in this, and I'm wondering if people are noticing that this story fits very well with the Halliburton overcharge aspect of these contracts, these overbilling contracts. So that they're essentially, and it's funny in reading some of these articles about the overbilling. It's been said that the price of gasoline in Iraq was between 9 and 15 cents a gallon, and in some of these articles it's saying that it's really 4 cents a gallon. So it's one thing to claim, I mean, they're tripling their money just on that 12 cents a gallon if it's really 4 that they should be charging. But one
that's what it gets retailed for.
Yeah, well, I understand that, and but it's even with the aspect of 12 cents a gallon, 15 cents a gallon, we have 15 cents a gallon. More like, you know, four times there.
But Halliburton isn't selling it at retail. We are. The U.S. government is selling it at retail.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah, we're buying it at $6.60 a gallon, and then we're selling it at
5 cents a gallon
or four or whatever. But it's you know, just the derivatives aspect of being able to cut the margin, you know, and to pocket the profits in a thing like that, or to profit the claimed losses. There are a lot of middlemen that would love to be getting a nickel on every pencil that's sold in Iraq at this point. But what I'm wondering, and this gives an opportunity to all of the unemployed people here in America, there are a lot of houses, farms, condos, factories being lost to foreclosure at the end of the year. And obviously, these Halliburton types are very cash rich at this point, and they're going to be the ones that are going to be snapping up all of these bankrupted, all of these places that are sold at bankruptcy auctions. And it's going to be very, it's a great opportunity for America to stand up on its hind feet and go down to these tax auctions. Back in the Depression in 29 and during the 80s as well, the farmers' movement made a lot of these appearances at these auctions and ruined the bidding process. They exposed the bidding process. They did the research to be able to find out who is buying up all of America at these bankruptcy auctions. And if these same con artists are essentially selling America out and then they're buying it up, buying it back for cheap, have an opportunity. If everybody's going to be unemployed, they can put their minds to good use and put their bodies down at all of the county seats. I mean, every one of the 50 states plus every one of the counties.
Yeah, it's a great idea, David. It's a great idea. And, you know, it's...
Well, I wonder if you could do a show on a thing like that. You know, the training, what it would take to look at... You know, what do you look for? What companies to look for?
Right.
What you know? What are some of the subsidiaries of the Bush family? What are the subsidiaries of the Carlyle Group or the
Well, I have been and I will continue to. And thank you, David. I appreciate the suggestion. I appreciate your call. And in fact, I want to get into that in just a second here. But first, I got a couple of things. Speaking, by the way, of the amount of money being spent, if you go to TomHartmann.com and you click on the radio show homepage, there's a cost of war in Iraq thing, and it links to costofwar.com. We have spent so far $89,806,902,000 on the war in Iraq, and so far, and that would be enough to put 9,069,000 additional children in Head Start programs. It would be enough to pay for health care for 27,495,000 children in the United States. It would be enough to provide 1,221,836 additional school teachers for 1 year. It would be enough to pay for 4 year scholarships at public universities for 1,627,085 American college students. And it would be enough to build affordable housing units for 916,398 people. And, of course, the numbers are climbing. So, yeah, crony capitalism is alive and well. Ted Kennedy had some thoughts on these kinds of things, and also on the Bush administration's war on labor, war on the middle class. There's an absolute war on the middle class going on here in the United States, coming out of the Bush administration. And here's Kennedy's thoughts on this.
As we look back now, it has been 7 long years seven long years that the Republicans have refused to let us get an increase in the minimum wage for those 9 million Americans who are on the lower end of the economic ladder. Who are these people?
And then he goes
and
on.
Thirdly, the increase in the minimum wage is a civil rights issue because so many of those that receive the minimum wage are men and women of color. It's a civil rights issue. It's a women's issue. But most of all, it's a fairness issue.
Yes, well said. Ted Kennedy, and he goes on with a few other points here. I'll get to that after the break. Kip in Illinois is on the line. Kip, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good.
Tom, the administration has come out and said that if you didn't go to war with us, if you didn't participate in this blunder with us, don't expect to share in the looting or in the spoils.
Right.
With that kind of vindictive attitude, can there be any doubt that this administration purposely leaked the name of a CIA agent because they didn't like what her husband did?
Oh, I think everybody's figured out that these guys are about payback. They pay back their friends richly, and they punish their enemies without mercy.
But where is the investigation? It's
well, everybody's scared to death of them. I mean, what has amazed me, frankly, Kip, is how few of the Democratic candidates have been speaking up against this. I mean, basically, Kucinich and Dean have been it.
Another thing that's been bugging me, Lieberman is coming across like he somehow thinks that he is entitled to the nomination. And, you know, I would suggest to Lieberman that we have tried this thing where we have been like...
We're out of time, Kip. You got 5 seconds.
Okay, we've been like Republican light and it hasn't worked. We've lost seats in the House and the Senate both times.
I agree.
I'm sticking with Dean.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Kip. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's to my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're
not getting
on the bed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah,
you
I was
know.
Expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however, each month. You'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Oh man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of true. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost. Like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not from right-wing think tanks and RNC talking points of the day memos to right-wing talk show hosts all across the nation. Is the Bush administration melting down in the midst of a battle between conservatives and neoconservatives within the administration, between the Powells and the Wolfowitzes? And will that lead to a massive further destabilization of the world order, of world peace? I mean, you've got the situation now where in Europe, the news out of the European, the EEC right now, the European community, is that there's this kind of war going on. They're confronting, that's not a war, it's a debate. They're confronting the same issue that the founders of this country confronted 227 years ago. Back in 1787, when they met to write the Constitution at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, there was this problem. There were big states with lots of people, like Massachusetts and New York, and there were little states with very few people, like Delaware, and the little states were saying, hey, you know, if we just go with proportional representation, that is, if the number of representatives that a state has to the legislative body is a factor of the population of that state, our voice is never going to get heard. And so we don't think we want to play in this game. And on the other hand, the states like New York and Massachusetts were saying, well, you know, if you don't do it by proportional, you know, if you don't have some sort of proportional representation, then little tiny Delaware will have just as much say as we do, and we've got, you know, 50 times more people. We should have more say, shouldn't we? And the compromise that the founders of this country came up with, which was brilliant, was that each state would have two representatives in the Senate, regardless of its size, which is why there's 100 senators, and that the number, and as it's defined in the 14th Amendment, that the number of representatives in Congress would be defined by the size of the state. So here in Vermont, we have one congressman for the whole state, Bernie Sanders. You just heard him during the last hour of this program. Other states have 5, 6, 8. I don't know the largest state and the largest number that they have, probably California or Texas, with, you know, a whole pile of them. But I don't know the number off the top of my head, but the point is that we came up with that system here, and right now they've only got one single legislative body, the European community, and they're bringing in these new states, these new small states, And the large states are getting upset, like Spain and Germany and France, and there's this conflict erupting over, you know, who gets represented and how that representation is defined. It's going to be interesting to see if they form a Senate and a House of Representatives sort of equivalent. I have a feeling they won't. I don't know how they're going to work it out. But the bottom line is that the biggest problem with the instability of Europe right now is that they're at the same time talking about creating a European military force, a European army independent of NATO. Why? Because George Bush has rattled their cage so bad, they're all scared to death of America. They're all looking at us going, you know, we thought we could depend on the United States. We thought we could always trust the United States to behave rationally, but they haven't been behaving rationally. They've gone off and invaded a country that didn't even represent a threat to them for a reason that had nothing to do with terrorism, and America's gone nuts, they're thinking. And so they're talking about creating their own military. And we, of course, are saying, no, you guys can't create your own military. You do that, we're going to be really upset. And, I mean, we're facing the possibility not just of losing our allies, not just of alienating our allies, but of finding ourselves on the outside looking in with regard to the entire world. And, you know, politically speaking, this is quite a crisis. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The world's environmental problems seem ever larger, but an author says people should think small. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A popular bumper sticker urges you to think globally, act locally. But focusing too much on the world's big problems can make you feel like giving up, according to David Suzuki. He's an award-winning scientist and co-author of a new book called Good News for a Change.
Environmentalists get into the rut of constantly warning that the sky is falling, you know, that we're going into global warming, ozone depletion, deforestation, desertification. And we get locked into the mentality that it's crisis, 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 and we've got to respond to it. But we don't spend, I think, enough time saying, what are the alternatives? Are there, in fact, solutions? Or are we just on an irreversible path that we can't get off?
Suzuki says we can turn things around, but time is running out.
There is absolutely no doubt that we have changed the makeup of the atmosphere, that the planet is getting warmer, and that we are causing imminent catastrophic consequences.
Suzuki says people must find ways to change their households and their communities without losing heart.
If you keep focusing on the global picture, it is so huge and so overwhelming, it tends to paralyze you. People feel totally disempowered because they feel insignificant. So it's important to understand that we're in a global eco-collapse, but we've got to be focused locally because otherwise one is rendered helpless.
Suzuki says people should contact elected officials about the big issues and work on things they can change close to home. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heaping helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Program Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Our program today brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, 1-888 Eco Wine, by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, and by the Newsletter Factory in Atlanta, Georgia. The Newsletter Factory, you can find their information at newsletterfactory.com. And thank you to our sponsors who keep us on the air. Bob in North Carolina is on the line, 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number. Bob, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Bob?
Well, I'm doing good, and I'll get better, too.
Good. Okay, here we are.
Just heard a little bit of your conversation a while ago about how, you know, we went into Iraq and that there was no reason to go in there. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you remember Desert Storm when Saddam went into Kuwait. And was probably going into Saudi Arabia next. And I guess it's a good thing we took action then. Would you agree?
Well, hang on just a second, Bob. Why do you think he was going into Saudi? Do you remember April Gillespie?
Yeah, I know. I remember that too. But
Kuwait historically had been one of the states of Iraq. I don't want to be in a position of defending Saddam here because the guy was a murderous thug and a dictator.
Right.
But, I think he represented a clear threat to Kuwait. We gave him permission to attack Kuwait, but I don't think in his wildest dreams he had designs on Saudi Arabia.
Well, you can say that we gave him permission to do that. Nobody has definite proof of that. I mean, that's all theoretical. So I guess it depends on whether you're on the liberal side or the conservative side.
Well, I'm on the watching ABC News side. Gillespie saying on TV that she gave Saddam permission, and she was the State Department representative there.
That's not what she said. She did not say, I give you permission to go into Kuwait, and you know that.
Bob, is he asked her if the United States would object if he tried to recover his 54th province, and she said, to the best of my knowledge, we would have no objection to that behavior.
Permission? At best, that's a stretch. But anyway, besides that, he went into Kuwait, and you probably jumped on Ross Perot, too. He said we shouldn't have gone in there then, but he's ultra-conservative, and I'm sure you probably were banging him against the wall, too. But
well, no, actually, I think Ross Perot said a lot of really good things.
I do, too. I think he was right on NAFTA.
He sure was.
Bill Clinton and the Republicans put that through.
Yep.
And it's been bad. He said it was bad, but besides the point, we got what we got. Okay.
Yeah, we got the giant sucking sound that Ross Perot was talking about.
Right, but I didn't hear the liberal news media out there talking about that at that time. But anyway,
you mean the Nation magazine?
Whatever. Anyway, besides the point, Saudi Arabia would have been next. Then Iran and Syria and Jordan, and the ultimate goal to get Israel. And so a big, huge terror network there. Maybe not with Osama bin Laden leading it, but certainly hoping it would work. And so for people to say, first off, no weapons of mass destruction, just because you hadn't found them yet doesn't mean they are not still there, not buried underground, whatever. And Clinton said they were there. The former Bush said they were there. Everybody knows they were there. And everybody knows that he would be very interested in building up a nuclear force if he could. And if he would have gotten that and had that, there would have been holy hell to break loose in the Middle East. But anyway, that's all I got to say. You guys on the on your side of the coin have got your opinion, and it's against the, most of the opinions of Americans. I'm not saying you're not patriotic. I won't go that far, but I'm saying that
you guys
keep trying to knock off anything. I guess the only thing good George Bush could do, in your opinion, would be to resign, and Cheney to resign also, and somehow or other get down to where a Democrat could take over as president.
No, what I'd really like to see Bush and Cheney do, Bob, is I'd like to see them start behaving in the best interest of the American people rather than in the best interest of their corporate donors.
Well,
that's the bottom line for me.
I'm sure you had some comments about Halliburton and how they were overcharging today, right? I didn't hear that part, but I'm sure that was in there. And,
well, if I haven't, I will now.
Okay, well.
Why not? It was a no-bid contract, Bob. Do you think that that has any, what does that have to do with free enterprise?
Well, you know, when you got to do something in a hurry, you can't necessarily put it out for bids. And all the subcontractors out for bids, this crap about letting France and Germany and Russia in there, they can subcontract if they want to, or they can go ahead and help us out with troops. And they can still make the bids, but, you know, it's a two-way street. But you guys don't see it the way I do, and you're entitled to your opinion, and I'll fight to defend that. And I've been there and done that, too. And I spent my time in Vietnam, and that was a wrong war for wrong reasons.
Well, I got it, Bob. Thank you for the Republican war.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thank you for the call, and thank you for sharing your opinion with us. Yeah, good point. Good point. You know, I think that there actually is an argument to be made that Saddam, and a strong argument to be made that Saddam was a threat to the Middle East, and I don't disagree with you. However, he was a threat that was contained, and we know from the weapons inspectors that we had in Iraq up until 1998, when we pulled them out, not when Saddam threw them out, but when we pulled them out, so that we could bomb him. We know because we have their reports. These are public records. These are public documents. It's not a secret. We know that the weapons inspectors destroyed at least 97-98% of all of his weapons. And we know that the bombing that Bill Clinton did in 1998, that the Republicans raised Cain about, claiming that he was trying to wag the dog, that bombing took out the rest of whatever he had. We knew that. At the end of the Clinton administration, they had a very high level of certainty that Saddam had nothing left. And the Bush administration came in knowing this. Saddam was a threat to the extent that he was not contained, but he was well contained. The big challenge was to get the weapons inspectors back in there, and we did that successfully. And Bush did that, and I congratulate him for it. And they should still be there. In my opinion, I believe that democracy, I'm entirely in favor of democracy in Iraq. I think that we absolutely, democracy in Iraq would be the very best thing for the Middle East. Democracy in any of those nations. I mean, Saudi Arabia is a vicious dictatorship. You want a dictator who tortures people? Go to Saudi Arabia. Go to Jordan. Go to Syria. I mean, all around that area. But the point is that democracies that thrive generally are not democracies that are created as a result of violence. Democracies that thrive, and look around at the democracies that are successful around the world, they're democracies that came from within. Well, many of them came about as a result of violence, but not external violence. They came about as the result of people within the country rising up and saying, we want to take control of our own country and operate it in a democratic way. The vast majority of the 81 democracies in the world did it that way, just pure and simple. That's how they did it. And I agree with Ambassador Mark Palmer, who was Ronald Reagan's former speechwriter, who on this program a couple of weeks ago said, If we had done it right, we could have fostered a revolt against Saddam within his own country, and then you would have a genuine and legitimate Iraqi democracy, and you would not have 400 dead American soldiers and several thousand American soldiers who've lost arms and legs and eyes and other parts of their body, and you wouldn't have thousands and thousands of dead Iraqis. Or if you did, at least the blood would not be on your hands and mine, Bob. I would like to, let me just play a real quick clip here. This is John Gage, the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees. So you got to keep in mind, the only thing that stands between corporations completely taking over this country, as they've already taken over the Bush administration, they're trying to take over the rest of Congress. The only thing that stands between them and us are the unions in the United States. Who else is standing up for people, for working people? And here's John Gage, the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, at a rally on Wednesday, speaking about
this. As this Congress, folks, is finishing up its gluttonous feast of public funds, I'm wondering if you're seeing this administration like I'm seeing them. Just follow the money. Every action, every bill, every regulation rammed through by this administration lines the pockets of big campaign contributors.
Amen.
Take Medicare, subsidized HMOs, an $800 million shot in the arm to drug companies, and most hypocritically of all, freedom from competition in setting drug prices.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts.
Folks, we're going to see logging companies. They're going to prevent forest fires by cutting down the trees. Industrial polluters will get tax credits. Private meat companies will inspect our meat.
Yeah.
And VA hospitals will be closed or contracted out, despite the one true fact, and maybe the only true fact of this war, and that is that today's soldier is tomorrow's veteran.
Yeah, and the veterans, boy.
And you can already hear the salivating of Wall Street, licking their chops over the big enchilada, the privatization of Social Security.
Yeah, and it's all to benefit Bush's buddies. That's the bottom line. Benefit Bush's buddies. Dean in Santa Fe has some thoughts on all of these issues, I suspect. Dean, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello.
Hey, Dean.
Yes. Sorry, I couldn't call early on this. I caught the tail end of the hour you had there with Barry, and I liked what he had to say there about people taking action at the end, and it made me decide to get on the ABC News website and respond to their deciding to not report on three of the presidential candidates anymore. I think that was extremely outrageous and highly suspicious of the timing, too, of the way with Kucinich calling Kabul on his cute little tricks there on the air about and wasting time that could have been spent on substantive issues.
Yeah,
so,
you know, it really makes Kabul look small.
What?
Yeah, I said it really makes Ted Koppel look small. It makes him look like he's petty, that he's, you know, easily enraged or something, or that ABC has decided that they're in the revenge business the same way the Bush administration. You know, George Bush really has changed the tone in America, just like he promised.
Right. And it also points out, I mean, Kucinich made some remark about the effect of media on the campaign, as I recall, right there at the end before Kabul cut him off on that one. And this just points it out all the more. You know, here they are.
Yeah.
Instead of protecting the electoral process, they're undermining it.
Yeah, Dean, if you go to Kucinich.us, he's got a new ad that he's running in Iowa, and you can see a flash version of it. It's a 30-second ad. And it's entirely visual, so I can't play it on the radio. I mean, there's just nothing but a music bed, and then it's, you know, words flashing on the screen one after the other.
Well, I'd like to do that.
It's really quite remarkable.
I really like what Kucinich has been saying. I think his message needs to be out there much more than it's been.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
that's what you called about, Dean. Okay, thank you for the call.
Bye.
1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. It's Friday afternoon, 13 minutes before the hour, and Sarah in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Sarah, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thank you
for calling.
You're doing such a great job.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to throw something out here that I know nothing about. Regarding the flu shots, have there been any statistics about how many people who've gotten the flu shot have come down with the flu? Because I do see that the marketing of the vaccine is probably quite profitable for pharmaceuticals. And
yeah.
It's I understand that the vaccine isn't even addressing the variety of flu that.
That's what
there.
I've read. Yeah, that's
so,
what, I, what I've read in the medical
maybe
literature.
Maybe they just had a whole big stash of this stuff that's obsolete, and this could be a good way to get rid of them. Now I don't know. I'm just wondering. And the way to
well, Sarah, here's what happened. And it's not. I mean, it's part conspiracy and part not. I mean, the manufacture and distribution and sales of flu vaccines is in part subsidized by the United States government. So the flu manufacturers, the flu vaccine manufacturers, are now making a much greater profit than they would normally make during a flu season. Because during a normal flu season, they don't sell all the stuff that they make. They end up eating some of it, and that's why it's subsidized. But the problem is that it takes about 4 months to grow flu. You've got to take the virus and inject it into the yolks of eggs, and then the virus starts replicating in that yolk material until pretty soon, you know, most of the certain types of cells in that egg yolk have been turned into virus cells, and then they extract the virus and weaken it or kill it, and you've got the flu vaccine. So 4 months ago, they decided which virus they thought was going to be floating around, and it turns out that it's a different one. The strain of the flu that's running around the country right now that's so dangerous is not the one that they made the vaccine for, and they don't have 4 months to make another one. By that time, the flu virus will be gone. What I find interesting is that a month ago, when the story was first breaking, people in the press, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, were always mentioning that this flu vaccine doesn't address this flu, but it might help you if the other flu shows up. The other flu doesn't seem to be showing up. So, as far as my read of the medical literature, and I'm not a physician, but my read of the medical literature is that these flu shots will not help against this particular flu at all.
Yes. Yes. Am I still on the air?
You are.
Okay. I totally agree with the way you just laid it out. But they are urging people to come and get the shots. Everybody,
oh, I know.
And that's the part that I'm a little suspicious of. And
well, I think Sarah, maybe they're hopeful that it'll have some mild secondary effect against this flu or something. I don't know, but I'm with you. Thanks for calling, Sarah. We're out of time here. Roger, stay on. I'll pick you up on the other side of the break here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Be right back.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, A&E presents the 2003 Biography of the Year.
Wow, what an honor. Thanks to my family for supporting me after I survived the Iraq ambush, and my fans for comforting me during my insider trading scandal. Oh, I'm not done. A shout out to my voice coach for helping me become America's favorite idol.
Only one will be Biography of the Year. Sunday night at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E, The Art of Entertainment.
Oh, it's my fiancé for the rocks that I got. Thanks, sweetie.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 911.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass. Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Sipe from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and of course, Danny Litford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern, right here on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont, engineered in Detroit by Steph Stryker and Steve Damschroeder. Our music was edited by Brad Walrod, and moral support for your host was provided by the extraordinary collection of wonderful, intelligent, funny, interesting, insightful folks in our chat room, which you can find as a link off TomHartman.com. Roger in Indiana has some thoughts on the various topics of the day. Roger, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks for having me. Your last caller brought up the flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was under the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a provision in the Patriot Act that would prevent drug companies from being sued for the levels of mercury in their vaccines. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it passed or not. I remember when the battle was going on, it was something that Bill Frist had snuck in. There was for quite some time there was this $10,000 reward that one of the Nader groups was offering for, you know, who put that into the bill. Yeah, I think it was in the Patriot Act.
I'm sorry. it's important, I guess, to point out that isn't George W.'s daddy on the board at one of the major drug companies down in Indianapolis?
Wouldn't surprise me, but I doubt that that had as much to do with it as Bill Frist's connections. And you know, the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobby on Capitol Hill. I think it takes more than just somebody's daddy being on the board. I think this was a full court press, and they got through to Bill Frist, and he wrote it into the law, as far as I can tell.
Okay, and the other point I originally called about is, originally I thought the Bush administration was, you know, looking for, I guess the word is oligarchy, and I kind of got the impression he was a very religious person, and I all these deep-seated, conspiracies to do this and to do that for corporate interests, I can't give the man that much credit. I don't think he's smart enough to put all that together.
Yeah, Roger, I'm inclined to agree with you, but I think that the people around him are pretty clever, and I'm very concerned about them. Roger, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining us today, all of you, and for this week. A beautiful Friday, Shabbat Shalom, happy weekend, TGIF, whatever's appropriate. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in Monday, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities.